Ramban is expression and Emor that the sphere is the Chol Hamoed between Pesach and Shavuos.
Is the instructor in the class?
Yeah.
Well, I better give her a slip.
Okay. Not a pink slip. Okay, what was the last thing we did?
We finished up the 6 to get out.
Say again, we did?
We finished up the 6 to leave Nida. Leave the state of Nida. Start the Shiv Nakim.
We did Shiv Nakim.
We finished up the 8 seasons.
We were talking about the 5-day minimum.
Oh, okay, good. Oh, I see. Okay, the 5-day minimum. Good. So,
we're starting with Chafifa, you said
that. Oh, good, okay. So again, to just review a little bit, that last week we pointed out that a woman, the way it works, that a woman wakes up in the morning after bleeding for several days, and she sees that the bleeding is stopping or a stop. So today could be day number 0 of the Shiva Nikiyam. So the first thing she does is make sure that she's a minimum of 5 days. All right, so we discussed the 5 days, possible exceptions, but if she's an exception to the rule, and she'd only have 4 days, she would have known that already. Earlier on, discussed it with the rabbi, probably before she starts counting the Shiva Nikiyam. So she'd make sure there's a minimum of 5 days, with day number 1 of the 5 being the day of the onset. Even if the onset began 2 minutes before sunset, that's day number 1. As long as today is the 5th day, so she can begin to do all the things she does on day number 0. She can wash the pelvic area. She will do a hefsek tara, a very careful vaginal check. And then right before sunset, she'll put in the moch dachuk and leave it in for about 20 minutes afterward. We would suggest that she does the hefsek tara in the morning and not wait till shkia, so that she has a default hefsek tara, that she's a backup in case she forgets later on to do it. So she can work with the morning one, and then following the moch dachuk, she puts on, when that comes out clean, she puts on the colored undergarments. And then for the next 7 days, does the general approach is 2 bedikos a day. Many rabbanim permit everyone to do just 1 bedika a day. She puts on white undergarments. Correct. She puts on white undergarments for those 7 days, white tight-fitting undergarments. And then during those 7 days, she does 2 bedikos a day, one in the morning, one in the afternoon before sunset. There are rabbanim who teach routinely to do only 1 bedikah a day. You can check that out with your own Rav as to what his position is. And then we discuss the flexibilities and the non-flexibilities of the system. And then, now we're coming up to the end of the 7th, on the 7th day of the Shiva Nikiyam. So she's preparing to go to mikveh tonight. Right? So, those preparations are called chafifa. Technically, chafifa means combing one's hair. But it's evolved that we refer to the preparations for mikveh as chafifa. Now, what do the preparations entail? They entail a very careful inspection of the body. They entail usually a significant bath. We'll discuss the length of the bath later on. Usually a shower. And combing out the hair. And if there is some kind of intervening, if there is something adhering to her body, she would have to remove it. The concerns, the reason why she does this, and the average chafifa, is obviously a wide range, she cuts her nails down. The average chafifa, we would assume, takes at least about 45 minutes to an hour. When you add up everything together, with some women take longer. But we would expect that if you add everything together, the cutting the nails, the combing the hair, and the long bath, and the 45 minutes or so. Now, and I'll tell you how we get that number later on. Why are we doing this careful preparation? Because there are two halachos which govern, define a good tevila. One is that she must be totally submerged under the water. Totally means the entire body, including her hair, under the body for at least few seconds. And the second is that the water must touch the entirety of her body. The first rule, it comes from the rule of Vo Hashem, the pasuk of Vo Hashem ish v'tor. The sun comes down and she becomes muteres. So the Gemara explains that phrase Vo Hashem ish was chosen because it also teaches us how a woman goes under the water. that just as the sun dips below the horizon in one fell swoop, and there is nothing of the sun above the horizon, so too a woman should be underneath the water, and at least one point, nothing of hers should be above the water, no hair, anything. Right? That rules out cumulative tevila. In other words, she can't do an arm, another arm, that would not be good. She has to be underneath entirely. That's the first din. And that's one of the roles of a mikveh lady, to make sure, because it's very hard to know if you're always under the water. Sometimes you think you're under water, but you're the kind of hair on the top. So if you have long hair, you could think you're under water, but your hair could be on the top of the water. So that's one of the roles of the mikveh lady. The second rule that we're discussing is that it says v'rachatz es kol b'sara b'mayim, that she has to wash all of her body with water. So all of her body means that there should not be anything that adheres to her body that stops the water from coming and stops her body from being in contact with the water. And that would, if there would be something, it would be called a chatzitza. It's chotzeit. It separates between the water and the body. So that's the second role of the mikveh lady. The woman can inspect herself with pretty decent efficiency to make sure there's nothing on her body. But she'll miss certain things. And she may, certainly there will be places in her back that she won't be able to see even with mirrors. So the second role of the mikveh lady is to make sure that there is nothing adhering to her body. To remind her, maybe she forgot to comb her, maybe she forgot to cut her nails, maybe she forgot to clean her teeth or something. So the mikveh lady's role is to help her out that way as well. Is the mikveh lady essential to tefillah? The answer is yes. Chassam Sofer says that he questions if tefillah without a mikveh lady would be effective. Now, certainly, you could argue that she could inspect her entire body. Not so clear. But it certainly is hard to go into water and know that she's entirely under. So there must be a mikveh lady. Once had a situation in our mikveh where some of the women got a little bit impatient because they came early. They came before the cleaning lady let them in. So they came to mikveh before the attendant was there. So they got antsy and they went to mikveh. They went to tefillah. But without a mikveh, there's a few women made them come back. So the chassam says, "Shaila, whether it's a valid tefillah or not." That's why if you're traveling and your wife is going to mikveh in the ocean, so then you have to do the role of the mikveh. Your wife will tell you what to do. But you have to play that role. You'll have to inspect your wife's body, and you'll have to go out. You'll go there anyways for safety reasons. But in addition to safety reasons, you'll make sure that she's entirely submerged. If you go over there, right? Sometimes you have situations where you go to a town where there's a mikveh, but there's no mikveh attendant. So they work out a system. But you get there, you don't know the rabbi will let you in. The rabbi's wife is out of town or something. How are you going to start calling up? You don't know who to call. So in those unusual situations, the husband would act as the mikveh lady. Sometimes it'll happen, you get stuck someplace. It's your wife's mikveh night. By the time you get back to town, it's 1, 2 o'clock in the morning. So sometimes the rabbi will say, depending on the situation, how important it is that the husband have a situation where you have a woman who is has a water phobia. So her husband takes her down. But that's not, was my situation, another rabbi. So the point of all of this is that when the husband takes his wife down, it's an extremely, extremely, extremely rare situation. But when it does happen, so we're saying that the husband inspects his wife's body, even though that's a violation of the rule that when your wife is in need, you cannot look at her body in an engaged manner. So how can we violate the rule? So Noda Yehuda says that this is the one exception to the rule. The one exception, because she's going to be permissible anyways in a few minutes. So we're not afraid that by looking at his wife's body, he'll get involved in something inappropriate. It's a very, very big kula. We don't apply that logic. We don't say, well, she's going to be a terrorist in 15 minutes, so you can pass things to her, so you can hold her hand, so you can be in the same. So we don't say these things. We say, no, she has to, until she's muteris, all these serim are on. So Rabbi Yehuda had this very big chiddush, which again comes up once in a very, very long time, if it comes up at all, that if it's absolutely necessary, it would never be a routine thing. It would only be in a very unusual situation. And then the husband looks at the parts of his wife's body which are to make sure there's nothing covered, and the parts that she cannot see on her own and cannot see with a mirror, and then he watches to make sure she's entirely submerged. That's the basic din of tevila. However, the dinim of chatzitza, of what constitutes a significant barrier between the body and the water, is much more complicated. Halacha is, he will explain a din deiraisa, a biblical ruling, a din derabbanan, a rabbinic ruling, and the minog, the custom that we follow. The custom that we follow is that any foreign object which adheres to the body, no matter how small or unimportant, we try to remove it before a woman goes to mikveh. That's the minog, it's the custom. The din deiraisa, the biblical ruling is that something is only considered to be a chafifa, a chatzitza, something is only considered to be an intervening substance that would disqualify the tefila, is if it's rubo umakvid, if it covers most of the body, and most people would not want it to be there. If it covers most of the body or most of the hair. When it comes to tevila, so we view the hair as a slightly separate entity. So, umakbid. So it's rubo, umakbid la sira, and this woman, and most people will be careful to remove it. That's a chatzitza deiraisa. That's very, very rare. So a woman would swim through an oil slick. So that'd be a chatzitza deiraisa. She has greasy, grimy oil all over her body. Right, so that she's dying to get it off her body. That's a chatzitza. If a woman would paint without wearing a painter's cap, so most of her hair is covered with paint, so she'll work very hard with different shampoos to get it off her, right, so then that would be a chatzitza. Because we evaluate the hair separately. So if it covers most of the hair, and she doesn't want it to be there, that would be a chatzitza. Right, let's say she bought a new, suntan lotion, and it's very, very thick and oily, and I'm very uncomfortable with it. She put all over her body, and she's going to mikveh. So then that could be a chatzitza deiraisa, conceivably. Depending if it's what role people would do. If she's makban on it, it could be a chatzitza deiraisa. So that's very rare. If there's something on her body covers most of the body or most of the hair, and she does not want it to be there. A chatzitza midirabonon is either it covers most of her body or most of her hair, right? Or if it's anything which she does not want to be there, no matter how small a part of the body it covers. So midin deiraisa, the biblical ruling is rubo umakbid, most of the body, and she does not want it to be there. And the din derabbanan is if it covers rubo, most of her body or most of the hair, or a very small part of the body, but she doesn't want it to be there. She has a large ink mark on her hand. She would never go to a wedding with that. She'd never go to an important client, an important appointment. So makvid, she'll work on it to get it off her hand. That's mere, small part of the body, who makvid doesn't want it to be there. And rubo covers most of the body, even though she may want it to be there. It's also hatzitza. In other words, she puts... She has something on her body. She has thick suntan lotion on her body. So it covers most of her body. She's happy that it's there. It's a very expensive brand. Everybody's buying this suntan lotion. So she wants it on. It would still be chatzitza midirabbanan, because it covers most of the body. So then the minog is, the common custom that we follow, is even niyot umak, mir vein umakbet. A small part of the body, you don't mind it being there, you would still remove it. Any foreign substance we try to remove, that's the minute. For example, let's say a woman has just got her nails polished. So you spend a lot of money getting your nails polished. Perfect job. So then that would be a chatzitza mitam minug. It's a foreign object that covers a small amount of her body. She's happy to have it there. It's a fresh job. So it's not a violation of the deraisa or the rabbanon. It's a small part of the body, she's happy to have it there. But the minug is to remove it. Let's say she has chipped the nail polish. Right, it's been a week already since she had her nails done. So now they're beginning to chip away. So, and she goes to mikveh with chipped nail polish, that would be a chatzitza mid'rabbanon. It's miyot, a small part of the body, umakpid. She doesn't want it to be there. She would, if she'd be going to a wedding, she'd remove it. Or she'd do it over. If she has an important appointment, she would remove it. That's miyot, umakpid. So that would be a chatzitza mid'rabbanon that would disqualify the tvila on the rabbinic level.
I thought you said Rabbanon was
Rubo Master,
but our Minog is
Rubo Master. No. The Rabbanon, again, let's be clear, thanks. The Rabbanon is, the Deiraisa is Rubo Umakbid. Right?
Right.
The Rabbanon is Rubo Ve'ena Makbid or Miyot Umakbid. Either one variable. Right? And the Minog is any foreign object, even without any variables. It's a small part of the body, and she doesn't mind it being there. Right? So the nail polish is a good example of the minog. It's a small part of the body, she's happy to have it there. So we would still tell her to remove it. The darbanon is the chip nail polish. Even a smaller part of the body. But she doesn't want it there. So that's the din darbanon.
What about a plaster cast?
Yeah, those are big problems. Thank God that we use them much less these days. Right? But a plaster cast, the old cast, with a, I used to call it plaster of Paris, I'm not sure what they call it right now, where they take the gauze and then they wet it with something and then it forms a hard cast. That those are big problems. A woman can't go to mikveh with that usually, because they can't get it wet. So they can't get that part of the body wet, it's a problem. So again, until 15, 20 years ago, it was a very big problem. Sometimes we could find the firmware of the fetus, so we would wait till this was acceptable on a medical level to remove the cast, have her go to mikveh, and then put the cast back on. Nowadays, Baruch Hashem, things are much easier because we have air cast and we have fiberglass cast, so many situations are not casted. And these fiberglass and air casts can usually be removed and put back on. So when these things happen, we try to figure out how long is this situation going to be. When is she going to be ready to go into an air cast or fiberglass cast? Right? If that's not happening soon enough, we may call an orthopedist and say, when's the earliest she can go to mikveh without compromising recuperation? Would he be willing to change the cast? At that point, we'll discuss later on, we would accommodate the doctor's schedule. We wouldn't make her go at night, probably work it out, try to work it out. But those are very serious issues. Very serious issues. If it's a serious break and the cast can be on for a long time. So again, just a few other examples of a woman has the stains on her hand, so she tries to remove them. All right, if it's mamish stained within in the skin itself, so then we try not to drive her crazy. We try not to drive a woman crazy. If a woman has hands that are stained and she can't get rid of it, she works on it, and there's nothing sticking out of the skin. And the bottom line is that with this, if she had to go to a wedding, she'd go. She wouldn't work on it. She has to work on it with soap, with the brace of soap. But the bottom line is right now, at this point, she would stop working on it. She'd go to a wedding. She'd go to a client. She'd go to, she can't think of a situation that, she can't think of a situation that, she would hold herself back and stay at home because of this, problem. So we'd say, if you worked on it already, okay, then go to mikveh, right? And she should only work on it with safe things. Some mikvos, They put all sorts of things inside the room for the woman to use. So if it's an embrace of soap, good. Industrial soap, good. But some mikvahs put like bleach and things like that inside. So that, I don't think that's a good idea. And then when I came to our town, so they had bleach in all the mikvah preparation rooms. I said, no, that's not a good idea. If you work on a relationship, we'll put in a brace of soap. We'll have bleach available on request. Because some women are used to using it, so they fine, they're not going to... But it shouldn't be in the room. It shouldn't. I don't think it should be part of standard. Anything which is so toxic shouldn't be part of standard procedure. That's where you work on it. So it doesn't come off at some point. So then there's a halacha that if a woman, if her business is such that her hands are always stained. She's a painter, and she's an artist. Right? So her hands are always stained. She's a kindergarten teacher. So her hands always have the most recent projects the next 50 days later. So then she's in the class of people who are not makpid, a calligrapher. So all calligraphers have ink on their hands. That's their advertisement. That's how they... So halacha is that she cleans up. Cleans her hands with it, and she can go to mikveh with stained hands, because that's her illness, that is her profession. So that class of people are not makbid on this on these stains. With that, right? But apparently this group of people the minhag was never established to preclude a group of people from going to mikveh, right? The truth is that the minhag would never keep a woman away from mikveh because of the minhag. We'd make them work on it, and at some point, but I don't know, the minhag was not formulated in such a way that she cannot go to mikveh. She can't satisfy the minhag. She cannot go to mikveh if she cannot satisfy the din derabbanan, and she'll have to go back to mikveh if she can't satisfy the din derabbanan. Right? But the minhag she has to work on it. She's trying. Yeah. So the umnas. So she there, since that group of people, it's like a counter, they have their own minhag. So once you become a fine artist, they should become a calligrapher, they have their own minhag. We have other things that are like splinters. When a woman gets, if she would get some kind of kutz, some kind of thorn, so they have to be removed. If it's below the skin, that's not a problem. But if it sticks above the skin, then it's a problem. Stitches. It's a big machlokas. If they are cat gut stitches, they're dissolvable, you don't worry about it. Then she's not removing them. They're part of her body already. They'll fall out. So that would not get in the way of going to mikveh. But if they're the old style, the ones that have to be removed, so most folks can say that they would get in the way of going to mikveh. That the thread as it comes out of the skin is a chatzitza. So even if they're fairly loose. I said in most poskim, there is a minority view, so that if that is a shayla, you may want to ask your own rav as to how he passes and what direction he gives. That's a good question. All medical things, there's a raging machlokas, whether medical things that are there to help you get better, are they considered a chatzitza or not? In other words, this goes back to the cast question, goes back to the stitches. Nowadays, they use steri-strips. Hopefully you haven't seen them, you have any need to see them. But those are, steri-strips are often used if it just doesn't need stitches. Right, if it just at the, it's recuperating. So steri-strips are two adhesive things that I've checked. They don't let any water through, but they're there to keep the skin closed. So all of these things was a big debate in the 1800s and the early 1900s, exactly what you were saying, that how do you view it? Do you see it as the lady is not makbid l'asira? She's happy, she wants the stitches. She wants it to heal, no infection and maybe no scar. She wants the steri-strips there, no infection. Right? So she's not makbid to get rid of it. Or do you say, no, she doesn't want the cut. She doesn't want the broken leg. So therefore she doesn't want the cast on. So exactly how do we evaluate recuperative items? are they evaluated as makbin lasira, not makbin lasira? So that was a very, very significant debate that went on throughout the 1800s and most of the 1900s. And then somewhere in the early 1900s, there was a consensus evolved to take the stricter view that any medical thing like stitches or stereotypes, we would evaluate them as makbidla stereotypes. She does not want them to be there. Again, in all of these things, there are minority views, and if you're Rav in certain situations may follow the minority view that it's worthwhile obviously raising the question with it. Now, oral things are a little bit different. First of all, the body, for the purpose of chatzitz, is divided into three parts. There is the bolua, things that are never seen, below the skin, the splinter that's below the skin, right? There's the pacemaker, that was a classic question. It's below the skin. Right? Balua is something that you never see. The guck inside a person's nose. There's a minute that a woman blows her nose before going to mikveh. But it's a chumra. Because something so far inside, there's no halacha that the area has to be washed with water inside. So anything that would be stuck inside would be called balua. It's never ever seen. It does not a chatzitza. Then the other extreme is something which is seen in the course of normal activity all the time. A part of the body that would, if one would not be clothed, would be seen in the course of normal interaction. Then the third area is called the beis hastorim. Those are parts of the body that in the normal course of activity are sometimes seen and sometimes not seen. The beis hastorim. The inside of the mouth is the base of the star. A person's talking, he's laughing, so you see the inside. A person is doing their work. It's often the person that looks at her. But you don't see, they're working. They're not talking, they're not laughing, so then you don't see the inside usually. Those are called base hastarim. When it comes to a chatzitza inside the base hastarim, so we have a special din that even though water need not get into the beis hastorim, right, into the mouth, it need not get, the beis hastorim is even a certain folds of the body of the beis hastorim, water need not get into the mouth. Never, when a woman goes to mikveh, she usually closes her lips, not tight, because we want the lips to get wet with water, but she lightly closed, and that's it, water doesn't go inside. Nevertheless, all the beis hastorim have to be prepared for going to mikveh as if the water would rush by. The Gemara is an unusual limud called a roi levila in vila makemis. We call sheina roi levila vila makemis. That put it loosely to the following: that sometimes the Torah gives us conditions, gives us rules, because the Torah wants us to follow the rules, and sometimes in addition to the rules, they also describe for us how the Torah wants a certain object or event to look, to be. Right? So, I'll give an easy example just to make it more easy to understand. Even though this may not be accurate, as we debated. And they can you count, if you have 9 people who are awake and alert, and the 10th guy dropped off and fell asleep, right? You have to wake him up in order for your minyan. You know, you want to say Kaddish. So one guy's been up all night and he fell on his face in the middle of davening, say Rachmanis. You have to wake him up for a Kaddish. So the Mephoshim say that it depends on this question. Here you could have 11 people. One kid is a boy who's 12 years old, right? And then you have a man who's 25 who fell asleep. Who has more das right now? A 12-year-old has more das than the guy when he's sleeping. So if we can't count the 12-year-old, we certainly can't count the sleeping guy. Right? On the other hand, the Gemara says, the Achronim say maybe not. Maybe the 12-year-old doesn't have the capacity to have das. He's in a royal of Bila. So therefore, Bila Makevis. But the 25-year-old, wouldn't he be awake? He'd have das. So that's the same kind of question. It's a machlokas, what to do over there. But the machlokas is whether you apply the principle. The original principle comes from the Korban Mincha. The halacha is that when you brought the flour and the oil and the water, you had to put into a bowl in which you could mix the whole thing. If you couldn't mix the whole thing, then you passed the mincha by having an undersized bowl. On the other hand, there's no obligation to mix it all together. So the Torah says mix it together. Mixing it together wasn't to teach us that you have to mix it together. You don't have to mix it together. It was to teach us that you have to have everything set up as if you'd mix it together. So the same thing applies over here. Inside the mouth does not require, the water does not have to get there. But the inside of the mouth, the base inside, has to be prepared as if water was going to get there. It has to be removed of any chatzitzas. So that's why women will brush their teeth and rinse their mouths before going to mikvah. Fine. But now the question comes up, what about dental work? So if it's permanent dental work, that's part of the body already. Right? What's permanent? It's there for, if it's there and it's not going to be taken out, permanent cap, it may fall out, but it's not going to be removed. That's certainly permanent. Permanent cap or permanent bridge.
Why isn't a pacemaker the same thing?
Why is that again?
Why isn't a pacemaker the same
thing? A pace makes even better.
You said before that was a problem.
No. A pace makes even better because the pacemaker is below, it's under the surface of the body. So if it's under the surface of the body and it's never visible, then that's not even a question. That's like, a splinter that's below skin surface. Right? That's not a problem at all, but this is something that's above the skin surface. But it's in the base hastorim, it's in the mouth. So we have a rule that has to be prepared. So if it's a permanent part of the body, so then it's part of the body, finished. If it's not a permanent part of the body, it's a temporary cap, a temporary filling, so then there's a big discussion amongst the poskim. What to do in that case? Practically speaking, what we usually do is we usually carve out several positions which allow the woman to go to mikveh. That's practically speaking. We're mitzarei of shittas. We ask, for example, there are some poskim who say, look, as long as you're not going to proactively remove it, don't worry about it. There are poskim who say, as long as it's in there for 30 days, it's part of the body. There are poskim who say, as long as it fits into the contour of the tooth, where it's supposed to be, it's bottled, it's part of the body. There's a very creative approach by Chief Pesach Frank and Ramesh Feinstein. They said that as long as that surface will be permanently covered, that doesn't matter. So as long as when I remove the temporary right away and put on the permanent, then it holds on a problem. So in this case, we have all these different criteria. Each one probably does not hold on the other. So in this case, what we usually do is we are mitzar. A woman will call up. She'll say, I realize I'm supposed to mix it tomorrow night, I just had temporary work done on my mouth. So the rabbi will ask a series of questions. He'll ask, when's your next appointment? More or less than 30 days. It's staying in for 30 days. Will it be in for 30 days before it's removed? Is it when it's removed, will the area be covered right away with permanent? Is it going to be actively removed? So all of these questions are being asked, the rabbi wants to carve out and be able to, in his own mind, before he tells the woman she's going to mikvah, in his own mind he'll say, look, it's a big question, but I got five positions that she can go to mikvah. And he'll count them off. That's the approach the rabbis take in this case. On the other hand, the reason why I explained to you how the rabbis work it out is because you should appreciate that sometimes a rabbi who gets a difficult shiloh of dental work will ask, when is she getting the permanent filling in? That's my first question. So if the woman says, I have an appointment tomorrow, so the rabbi will probably say, look, instead of me, if there's no problem of shalom bayis, and it's not an issue of fertility, so instead of me killing myself to carve out five different positions to let you go, so go tomorrow night. That's the one practical difference between a straight psak and carving out the tzara pulling sheets together. So when it comes to temporary dental work, many rabbanim, again, I can't say what it's going to be, you have to ask your own rab, but many rabbanim will first ask, what's the, how long, and how many nights would it mean that she can't, that we are postponing mikveh. If it's one night, he may stay away. Two nights, I'm not sure. More than nights, I'm sure that then we'll go the other route and permit her to go based on various positions that they have to be raised. We comb the hair out because the hair could get knotted, and that could be a chatzitza unto itself. That's why we comb all the hair out. The reason that we ask the woman to cut the nails, this is a, again, it's a minhag to cut the nails. And there are two reasons given for the minhag. One reason is that the nail often picks up dirt, so we want to try to avoid that. And the other is the nail is a chatzitza unto itself. That since the nail is going to be coming off, so so there's a body surface, namely the one that is underneath the two parts of my nail, which may very rarely see the light of day. Nevertheless, Chazal made a din that that the one should try to cut the nails down so that surface will be washed by water. So that's why the minhag Yisrael is that women cut their nails down. How far down do they cut it? So some cut it down, take as much of the white off as they can without hurting themselves. They should never hurt themselves. Shouldn't make themselves give themselves any pain. And other women more makele and cut it down to the roundness of the finger. So if you look at your hand this way, nothing peaks up. Right, those are different approaches. Every so often we have situations, in fact, where a woman feels that cutting her nails down is such aggravation for her. And that if it could challenge her going to mikvah, then that's to discuss with the rabbi. When he gave instructions to the mikveh lady, I shouldn't say it that way, he was talking about something else, but the mikveh ladies already in Europe, and certainly in modern communities in America, are always instructed that they should inspect the woman carefully and make sure that there's no chatzitza, and remind the woman of what she's supposed to do, and remind the woman that she should cut her nails down. But if the woman hears her and says, Afal PK, I'm not going to cut it down, then we don't push anymore. So the woman would go to make sure she'd have paint on her and she'd have her hair would all be in knots, and the mikveh would say, Kavalas, let's prepare properly. But most mikveh women are instructed in modern communities, if a woman comes in with long nails, remind her. If she knows the lady and she knows she's a shame every Shabbos, and then we say, no, it's not full around, let's cut the nails, that's the mikveh is wrong. But if it's a woman that the mikveh doesn't recognize, and she reminds her, and she says, Afal Pikein, so then our approach is to leave it, because it can happen sometimes that that's so important to a woman that she could challenge her whole allegiance to the mikveh. But any kind of dirt, any kind of eye duck, any kind of dirt, any kind of heavy cosmetics, she should remove before going to mikveh. That's why we have a few rules about the day of the mikveh. Rule number one is that a woman should not eat any meat the day of the mikveh, unless it is a sudas mitzvah. If it's a sudas mitzvah, so then she's allowed to have meat, but we prefer chicken. She's supposed to go to mikveh Matzoy Shabbos. So this meals and Shabbos are sudas mitzvah. So we prefer that she should have that she shouldn't have meat. It's a sudas mitzvah, she's allowed to have meat. We prefer to have chicken or fish if possible.
There halal chicken will be included in that thing?
Yeah, like on a Tuesday. There's no sudas mitzvah. You would say, yeah, she shouldn't have any meat that day. She shouldn't put on any very heavy, thick cosmetics that are going to get in the way of her preparation. She shouldn't spend time doing anything very, very gucky or sticky on the day that she's going to mikveh. Right? That's something we try to avoid. Uh-huh. Yeah.
What's
the problem with meat? Maybe it's stuck in her teeth. So you prefer that she should remove it. The how significant must the makpid be for there to be a problem at the Rabbanon level? So here we follow the position of the Ravid. The Ravid is a very strict position. Ravid says that that a woman has a ring and she always has the ring on. She only takes the ring off to knead dough. So in that case, halacha is that since she takes it off for that one kind of situation, so then that's considered to be makpid. That's why so many times women go to the mikveh, go wash their hands, and they put their rings in their mouths. They never take their rings off, only for washing their hands. How does this develop? Because the Ravid is the strict position that says that if the that if you remove it for any reason whatsoever, that's already called makpid, the makpid losira. All right, so I think that those are the chatzitzas, and that's why women will work very hard to remove the chatzitzas so that the water washes entirely on her body when she goes to mikvah. Now, was that? So dry skin, she'll work a little bit to remove it and then leave it. But she'll rub something maybe with a little bit of puma stone or something. Show a little bit. Again, the main thing is that she should not hurt herself. Let's say a woman has a ring on and her hands are swollen. So what's the din then? So number one, she tries to work on it a day or two in advance and see whether she was soaping it. Can she get it off? But that didn't happen. So now she's holding by the mikvah, she can't get it off. So of course we're going to let her go. We would prefer if she could get it off. But if not, so then she tries to move it around underwater. While she's submerged in the water, move it around so there's some water underneath. But there also, the bottom line is that a chatzitza which would cause pain to be removed, so we would not advocate to be allowed to go into mikvah without it. All right? Okay, any questions about chatzitzas? Okay, so because of the issue of chatzitzas, therefore women will do an extensive preparation as we explained. Where the woman does preparation very much depends on her family situation, what's going on at home. When she's first married, she might as well do all her prep at home and then drive to the mikveh. After she has several children, it'll be difficult for her, certainly in the winter months, before they're all out of school, for her to prepare for going to mikveh without the kids picking up on something. A woman never showers. She always never takes a bath. She always showers, and all of a sudden she's taking a bath. So at some point, the kids are going to figure out what's going on. So if a woman might prefer to prepare herself at the mikveh house, different approaches, and we girls try to accommodate the different kinds of situations, try to foresee that by having different size rooms. All right, so that's the preparation with nuz for mikveh. Right, now the next thing we have to discuss is the timing of going to mikveh. It's a little more complicated. Yeah, go ahead.
Timing of the preparation?
No, of the going to mikveh itself. The timing of the preparations should be done close to sunset with a preference, a strong preference of doing them after Plagim Mincha. But an hour and a quarter before sunset, if that's possible. But I'll discuss the timing of that momentarily. The timing of going to mikveh itself we hold it has to be after, we all know that it's after the night of the seventh. Right? She counts 7 days and then can go to mikveh on the eve of the eighth. Everything being smooth. Alright? But now the question is, what do you do with machshava? Right? What do you do with her, the question is, That's right? She's supposed to go to mikveh tonight. So, really, the din really was that she can go to mikveh during the seventh day. Last thing we described is the difference between a zav and a nida. Alright? So, a zava has to count 7 clean days and goes to mikveh. Now, you all know that very often in halacha, when a woman has to count 7 clean days, whenever you have to count, whenever you have 7 days, you have a rule of miktsasa yom kukulo. That part of the day counts for the entire day. Right? Rachman al son, a person sits shiva, so no one ever sits a full 7 days. People sit usually 5, usually 4 days, and 2 part days. Right? The day that they come home from Lavaya, that's part of a day, that counts as a full day. The day that they get up is part of a day, a little bit, 10, 20 minutes in the morning, then they get up. There's a 2 days out of 7, when they Shabbos. Right? So we had this rule, miktsasa yom kukulo. During Svira, a person who the Svira is over, let's say in Lag BaOmer, so if it's over in Lag BaOmer, someone still keeps the Svira for a little bit in the morning, a few minutes in the morning. Miktsasa yom kukulo. So the same thing is true for the 7 days of Shemini Nekiyim. On the seventh day, so a woman wakes up in the morning, there's a bedika, she should be able to go to mikveh. She's counted part of the seventh day. The Gemara says, Taki, you're right. She could go to mikveh. But Chazal made a very strong din derabbanan, a very strong rabbinic decree that she should not go to mikveh during the seventh day. When I say strong, it means that it's hardly an exception. Strong in this case means that they made a secondary gzera to protect this gzera. Chazal did not want a woman going to mikveh on the seventh day because they were afraid that the woman would come home, she'd be with her husband, and if after that she'd have any kind of bleeding at all, then she would have been with her husband under the while she was still in nida. So therefore Chazal were afraid and they said, never can a woman go to mikveh during the seventh day. And then they went further and said a woman can never go to mikveh during the day at all. Because how are people going to know whether it's the seventh day or whether it's the eighth or ninth day? Chazal called that takana srach vita. That a woman has to be afraid of what her daughter will learn from her. A woman will go to mikveh. So if for some reason she couldn't go the night after the seventh. For some reason it's the eighth or ninth day. So Chazal were afraid that a woman would say, so what have we got to lose? On the seventh day, there's a problem that maybe I'll come home and I'll be with my husband and then I'll bleed and I'll be Easter. Today, it's the eighth day, she comes home from mikveh, she's with her husband, and she bleeds afterward, it won't be retroactive, it'll be mikama lava. She'll still be with her husband in a permissible way. So, why should she not be able to go during the day of the eighth day, the ninth, or the tenth day? So Chazal said, Srach Bita. Because her daughter will see her mother coming home from mikveh in the middle of the day. The daughter's not going to know it's the 8th and it's the 7th day, the 10th and the 7th. All the daughter's going to know is that her mother went to mikveh during the day. She's not going to ask any questions. It's not raining outside. Her mother doesn't swim, right? The daughter is in the 11th, 12th grade in high school. She knows that she knows about mikveh and she knows they don't talk about it. So you don't talk about it, you don't ask any questions. But she's going to see her mother comes home, she's going to say, oh, that's the minig of our family. You go to mikveh during the day. So when she becomes a kala, when she gets married, she'll say, our minig is we go to mikveh on the seventh day. Because she won't know it's the eighth and ninth day. So Chazal made a secondary gzera, which is not as powerful as the first, that a woman should never go during the day, always at night. The woman always goes at night, and the secondary gzera is not as powerful as the first. We do have exceptions. There's a famous tshuva that came to the Ramah that a woman made parnas of having a store open. And so she asked the Ramah, or the question came to the Ramah, this woman, in order to make a parnas, kept the store open every day, every night. People came home from work, they'd come by the store. That's when she made a parnas. So she says to her Rav, who then wrote to the Ramah, he said, if she closes the store one night a week, the whole town knows it's her mikveh night. Right? But they know there's no chasana tonight. It's a small town, right? They don't play bingo in those days. So why is she closing it? Once a month, right? The whole town knows it's a mikveh night. It's a terrible thing. A violation of her privacy. It's sneez. So the Rama said, this would be, she's a chikin go v'yom. And the store was closed sometime during the day, so she would go v'yom. But not the seventh day. Only the eighth day. Right? Sometimes it happens, you're traveling, so your wife has to go to mikveh in the ocean. So you're going to go with her. Look, at night, it's going to be dangerous. So it's going to be dark. Either it's dangerous, or there's a lot of lighting, it means that they're all out there. So you have no privacy. So either you're not going to win. So what do? You want to go early in the morning before anybody's awake. So then that would be okay on the eighth day, not on the seventh day. But on the eighth day, that would make sense. So there's an issue of tznius. Then we can go on the eighth, but not on the seventh. Seventh, we only go. It's a very, very big shas at chak. It's very, very rare that we are matir to go there on the seventh. But sometimes many rabbanim are matir in the following case, like the Pesach. Pesach was Thursday, Friday, Shabbos. So let's say a woman was going to be of a yomtiv in a place where there's no mikveh. She was supposed to go to the mikveh Wednesday night, first Leil Seder, right? But she's going to a place where there's no mikveh. So the closest, when will she end up going to mikveh? Earliest Motzei Shabbos. That's 3 days late, right? Not Wednesday, I think that's Friday. So then many rabbanim say, that's a lot to impose. 3 days. So many women, many rabbanim will go light and allow them to go on the seventh day during the day. There's a shuva from the Chassam Sofer. Chassam Sofer had somebody came to a new town. And they gave the Rav the tour of the town. But he's the new Rav. They showed him his responsibilities. They showed him the shuls. They showed him the chadarim, the yeshivas, the batei midrashim, the shloft house. So he finished the tour. He said, nope, you haven't shown me the mikveh yet. He said, there's no mikveh in this town. And this is a very, very religious town in Hungary. So the Rav said, with no mikveh? He says, yeah, it's not a problem. That the town is built around a river. So everybody's built their house on the river. So everybody goes to their backyard and they go to mikveh in the backyard or whatever. So the Rav said, let me see the river. So they showed him the river. So the rivers are natural bodies of water. They're very, very tricky with a good mikveh or not. If you're ever traveling and you need to use a natural body, you have to call up. There are only a few people you can call up who know these halachas. Again, you usually have to go out and see it first and then call up to find out if it's a good mikveh or not. So this Rav saw that the river is not such a good mikveh. According to most positions, not a good mikveh. So it's a courageous Rav. First job, first thing he's got to do is teach the town that their mikveh, their grandmother's mikveh, the mother's not a good mikveh. Alright, it's Yatta Deshmaya. That was his honeymoon project. To teach them the mikveh is not good, they have to build a new mikveh. So the town was described as a little hill just outside the town. They built the mikveh on that hill. Fine, everything's good. And then a few months down the road, the Rav asked the mikveh lady how things are going. It's fine. So he says, I was thinking about this. There are many shilas, but how come there's never a shilah on Friday night? There should never be a suffix. Why should it be different? So the mikveh lady said, because no one comes Friday night. Friday night, they're going to leave the town, go up the hill. Friday night they use their mothers or grandmothers and mikvahs. How bad could it be? Right? So this Rav wrote to the Chassam Sofer and said, he's not going to win this one. Right? It's not going to happen. That he knows how far he can push the town. So the Chassam Sofer is a long shuva there. We discuss this. It's a good mikvah, not a good mikvah. Finally, Chassam Sofer says, you're right. That there are positions that hold it's not a good mikvah. So the shiloh was the following. The shiloh was that the only way that this is going to work is if I can tell the women they can go during the daytime on Friday while it's still light and come back home. So this is a very serious shiloh. He has a choice. Either use a shvach mikveh or use a good mikveh, but against the din de rabbanon, I'm not going during the day. The Chassam Sofer said the following, that they can go during the day, made the following rule though, that there is a position, which I don't remember if he quotes, other Chuvas quote, maybe he does quote, that this din, that a woman cannot go on the seventh day, the Rishonim will say that the original din was she can't go on the seventh day such that she comes home during the day. But let's say she goes to mikveh during the seventh day such that she comes home at night, so then she'll be okay, because her whole concern was that she'll be with her husband. By the time she comes home, she's with terrorist her husband. So that's not the consensus, but the minority does Yochim. The Chassam Shevi say, we'll do the following. We'll keep the spirit of the rule. We'll make a new rule. That a woman can go to Mikvah on Friday, again, on this, and this crazy, for this town. It wasn't a general talk, for this one town. Such that when she comes home, the husband's on his way out to shul. Alright. So that was as far as the, and that is our general rule. If a woman's supposed to make a Friday night and can't go Friday night, then we usually say Mitzvah Shabbos. If there's a fertility issue, if there's a Shalom Bayis issue, right, then we'll talk about being Seimach in the Chassam Sefer. In recent times, one of the blitzes of Rav Moshe, one of the maverick positions of Rav Moshe, was to say that to go easy and to apply the Chassam Sefer's ruling if a woman's going to lose out and not go Friday night. In other words, a woman calls up Rav Moshe to the following. It's a maverick position. Most Rabbanim will not follow this. But he would say, if a woman calls up, she wants to go to mikvah tonight. Today's Friday, she's going tonight. She says, I want to go before candle lighting. Rabbi will say, I'm sorry, you never go during the day. She says, but Rabbi, it's an hour long walk. I'm not going to go tonight. I'm not going to leave for Motzei Shabbos. Rabbi, I'm not feeling so well. I just got over the flu. If I have a half hour walk tonight, in the winter, it's going to rain tonight. So Rabbi Moshe says, bottom line, the rabbi has to find out, is she going tonight or not? She's not going tonight, so Rav Moshe, in that case, we could follow the Chassam Sefer's ruling in that case. Have a little bit earlier, come back home. Again, it's a maverick position. Many, I would say most mikvos do not follow this ruling. But if the question comes up, and it is a difficult situation, so one should raise that question with one's Rav. Now the question is, what does that have to do with when she does her preparation? Right? When does she go to mikveh? Answer, she goes to mikveh night. After tzeis. Right? Whenever that is. Whether it's 42 minutes after sunset, 50 minutes after sunset, 72 minutes, 90 minutes, whatever it is. After tzeis. Right? Can't she go before tzeis? It would have to be a shas adchak, some unusual, crazy situation. Can she go to mikveh on the 8th day, 9th day during the day? Alright, not routinely, but if there's some very difficult stress situation and it seems we can't figure a way around it, so then she go on the 8th day, the 9th day, but not on the 7th day. Alright? A kala, by the way, goes during the day. That's routine. A kala, all of your kalos will have to go through the routine that we discussed last week and this week before marriage. Because all of your kalos are nidos. That's the din, that the women don't go to mikvah before they get married. Right? So they're all nidos. So they all have to go to mikvah before they get married. So then we allow a kala to go during the day. Because the kala knows that whatever she does as a kala is special, she has many special licenses that she knows that she'll go during the day. That's a once in a lifetime thing. We encourage kalas to go during the day because they have much more privacy. Because they can take as long as they want. Because they'll have just the mikvah and the kala, or maybe the revitzin, or maybe the mother, whatever it is. So that's, we encourage a kala to go during the day, but she can take all the time in the world, and she has the whole mikvah to herself. Generally speaking, a kala goes to the mikvah before she gets married within the 4 days of the wedding. The ideal thing would be that she goes on the day of the wedding. And that's the way it used to be. If a woman got married at night, they used to go in the morning. She got married at 12 o'clock in the afternoon and then would go the day before. That's something. But nowadays, women are so stressed out on the day that they get married that the moment they get up at 5 o'clock in the morning, they're already busy doing all sorts of important things. So therefore, most kalas will get very stressed out if they hear that they have to go to mikvah for the day. And it's still the preference. But if they can't do it, so then the day before, 2 days before. Usually we like to have within 4 days, not more than 4 days. It's a minute. You can't say it's a strong, it's a din by any means at all. There are situations where Rabbanim will say go even before. But that's the preference. And then she has to do Shiva Nikiyim. That's an important thing. Usually the mikveh, the kala teachers, that's the very first thing that they at least discuss with the kalas. Because just to make sure that no one's going to require the Shiva Nekiyim before the Kal teacher gets the Shiva Nekiyim. Right? Every so often it's happened that a woman did not understand that she needs Shiva Nekiyim before she gets married. So that makes life very, very difficult. We'll discuss that. Chubas Nid is a big problem. So first we always make sure that a woman is aware that before she gets married she requires Shiva Nekiyim, 7 clean days. She does not require the 5-day minimum, because that we explained last week, that was because that was a result of being with her husband, right? So, and usually what we do is we figure out when she goes to mikveh. So she wants to go to mikveh before she gets married. Let's say she's getting married on a Sunday night, so she's going to go to mikveh Sunday morning. So we count, so we figure, right, let's not leave things so tight. Let her start doing her Shiva Nekiyim 10-11 days before. That way, if she has trouble getting a good bedik at the beginning, she'll have time to call her mother or call her Rebbe sinners. She's time to work it out. She starts 7 days before the wedding, so she's up against the wall. So she'll be very hard for her. So she has a few extra days. Finish the day too early, it's gefrel, right? But that's what we try to do. That's what a kala should be aware if she can. Now, I'll get to it. Sometimes they get their period at the time, so they can't do it. But if she can, she should try about, and every 10 days is exaggerated, but only 9 days before she has to make her. Give herself a good 2-3 days where if she's having trouble doing a Moruch Dochuk, doing a Siktar or something, she'll be able to ask somebody. Alright? That's important to keep in mind, that make sure when's Kalos are aware of having to do Shiva Nekiyim before they get married. Alright? Now the question is, what's that to do with the timing of Chafifa? The timing of the mikveh, night. Right? Except for an unusual Shas of Chak. So what about the timing of Chafifa, of the mikveh preparation? So this was a machlokes in the Gemara. Machlokes in the Gemara. When's the ideal time for Chafifa? Is the ideal time Teichef Letfila Chafifa? Do it right before you go into the mikveh. There's a lot of sense. You'll minimize the period of time in which you could pick up a Chafifa. Right? Chatzitza, sorry. Right? So Teichef, do it right away. The other approach was, no, do your preparation during the daytime when you can't go to mikveh. You do your preparation at night, so every moment of preparation is a moment when you could be in mikveh. Do your preparation during the day, take your time, right? Study for a take-home test at night, so you rush the study because you want to get going already, you can do the test already. But when you study during the day for a test, it's going to be tonight, you take your time, because what are you writing to? So the same thing with the tevila, right? With chafifa, as the machlokes in the Gemara, what will produce a better chafifa? So the Gemara really doesn't have a psak on that, and the Rishonim argues to what is the psak, and for hundreds of years the general custom was to try to cover our hedge our bets, so which wasn't much of a problem because it wasn't in their plumbing anyways. So they did their preparation at the base of tefillah anyways. So the way life worked out is a woman would go to the place where the mikveh was. In that place there were bathtubs or pools for preparation. The preparation pools and mikveh pools. Right? The old mikvahs in Yerushalayim, you can still see it. Right? Absolutely no privacy to anybody. But what they would do is they would go to the mikveh after, around sunset time. Stand around sunset. It was perfect. They couldn't go to mikveh anyway, so till the stars came out, to go chavim. And they couldn't go to mikveh anyway, so after till the go chavim. So they took their time, and they were juxtaposed. Finished chafifa, next to go in the tefillah pool, right? So all of that changed in the time of the Maram Padua. Right, it was in Italy. About the time of the Rambam, 1500s. And the change over there was that they began the ghettoization of Jews. And the Italian government began giving Jews a very specific place. And they gave them a large plot of land, but that's where they had to have their shuls and their mikvos and their chadar mechulei. So now they came to the Rambam Padua and said, I think they were in trouble now. Why? one of the women are going to mikveh the same time the men are going to shul. So as long as they were far apart from each other, so it wasn't a problem. But now the women are going to mikveh shkiyah. That's when the men are going to mincha. Right? That's when they're coming back from Arab, depending. So Ram Padova said, all right, now we got to take a stand on the psak. What's better? Biyom, preparation in the day, preparation at night, right before tefillah. So he made the following rule. They worked at truth is, it only made sense to do the preparation at night. Right? They had to go to mikveh later on. Then they have indoor plumbing. So they had to do their preparation at night after the men left from Arav. Alright? So, given that, the Maran Pana made the following rule. That we will follow the ruling of Techef Lechafif at Tzvil, even though according to some that was a minority rule. But we'll follow that rule. Best thing is to have your preparation right before your Tevila. However, he said, we gotta keep the sense, the logic of the other ruling, which may have been the majority ruling. So how do we do that? Well, what was the logic? The logic was, let's create a period of time in which a woman cannot go to mikveh. So her prep will be a very good prep. So he said, all women, and this is where the clarity breaks down a little bit, exactly what he said, all women should prepare for a shoah achas. So we're not sure, and there's a range of how that was put into practice. Some said shoachas is an hour, 60 minute hour. Others said shoachas. Iev shalama lefenecha filu shoachas, right? Asher yotzer doesn't mean a 60 minute hour. It means a chunk of time, right? So, and then the question was, what did the Maran Padova say? That you have to spend the shoachas in preparation. You have to spend the shoachas in the tevila place. That's why I said before that a woman should allot about 45 minutes for preparation. Right? Because that sort of a safe estimate as to what the Maran Padova meant. If you assume that by the time a woman gets undressed and goes to mikveh, gets dressed in about 15 minutes, so 45 minutes of prep time is very, it's a reasonable amount of time. You're talking about brushing the teeth, you're talking about combing hair, inspection, bath, shower. Sometimes it means a second shower if she did a preparation at home. So she goes to the mikveh, she'll do a second bath. So if you add all these things together, cutting nails, should be about 45 minutes. So therefore, you really hedge your bets that that together with the tefillah is about approximately about an hour. It's also a significant chunk of time. So that's what I would suggest women should do. So that way, if they set aside, I got to spend 45 minutes preparing, I mean, everything. So then you have you accomplish what you want to accomplish. What's the absolute minimum? So Rav Moshe writes, the absolute minimum for some kind of shasat chak this woman is under tremendous time pressure. Right? So she's got to figure out the smallest chafifa. Right? Obviously she's not going to, she'll comb her hair very carefully. She'll brush her teeth. She'll inspect her body very carefully. The mikveh will inspect her body. She can't compromise in the chafifa. But she works fast. So she wants to know, or she wants, so Rav Moshe says, in that case, take a bath 10 minutes longer than a regular bath. Right? In other words, you have to, it used to be that people took baths, right? So they knew what Rav Moshe meant. You have to figure out how long, if I was taking a bath, how long would it take for me to clean myself? Add on 10 minutes to that. What was Rav Moshe's thinking? I have to create a period of time where a woman has nothing to do but take care of chafifa. Right, so after she's cleaned herself, she's washed herself, so now there's 10 minutes on the clock, got nothing to do. So at least she'll inspect herself for 10 minutes, she'll come ready, she finds things to work on, she'll work on it. So that's the absolute minimum. But the preference, unless you run them say otherwise, would be about 45 minutes, but that's an all, and that's that, you can already accumulate points. You know, you can, if she cuts her nails for 5 minutes in the morning, so then if she works on something, and from the other hand, works on getting her ring off, so that you can all add into the to that period of time. Who's that? That's funny. Yeah, that you can't do. Otherwise,
Bill Blatt.
Is that Bill Blatt?
So,
the
Moshe's shear that is doctor for the bathtub, or does that include everything? This shear added 10 minutes. That included.
No. I believe what Moshe was saying is she's going to wash herself carefully. She's going to comb her hair out. She's going to brush her teeth. plus 10 minutes of, you know, of sitting time, where she just inspects her body and works on anything she has to work on. I think that's what he meant.
On Fridays, if you have to tefillah on Fridays, what was the original sense of when you're supposed to do tefillah?
Right. If a woman is going to make a Friday night, and then she does all the preparation during the day, right? And then she has a few options. She's going Friday night, so she'll do her prep during the day. She will not do any prep in the mikveh place at all. She'll end up going underwater. Okay, she'll do her tzvil itself. Depends on the community. Most communities now will have her come in a little bit early, like 20 minutes after sunset. Some 40 minutes after sunset. Usually now most are being makeable for 20 minutes after sunset. She has options as to how she gets to mikveh. One option is to light candles at home and walk to mikveh, because lighting candles is going to at least be about 40 minutes before she 35 before she has to go to mikveh, right? That's the minimum, right? So she lights candles at home and takes a leisurely walk to mikveh. That's one possibility. The other possibility, and she only does it on a non-routine basis, is to light candles at home al tanai, having in mind that she's not accepting Shabbos till she gets into the mikveh. So then she can light candles, let's say 18 minutes before, drive to the mikveh, right? Leave the car there over Shabbos, obviously. Only she, if she has a nondescript license plate, right? So, and then she goes to the mikveh and she waits until the mikveh lady comes and goes down and take. And on the Friday night, most communities have an arrangement where you have to call the mikveh to make an appointment. For numerous reasons. Number one, because if no one's coming, she doesn't want to be there. And number two, the mikveh wants to have everybody coming at the same time, because it's very difficult for her to just be with her family. And she also can't wait in the mikveh in case somebody's going to come. So most communities say for Friday night you have to make an appointment. And it's all mikveh in advance. And then, when a woman goes to mikveh Friday night, she has to be very careful, certainly in the winter, to pat her hair dry, because she can't squeeze her hair out. And she has to be careful also to use several towels, so that no one towel becomes sopping wet, so she won't squeeze it out. And then obviously in winter she waits till her hair is dry so she can leave. If she's going to mikveh Matzoi Shabbos, so then the general minhag is to do her prep on Friday and on Matzoi Shabbos. Whatever can be repeated. Obviously she can't cut her nails twice. But aside from that, she combs her hair both times, she takes a bath both times, takes a shower both times. That's the general minhag. If for some reason she's stressed for time, so the Friday afternoon is the more important one, surprisingly enough.
Why is
it
possible?
Because it seems that more Rishonim held that it's more important to do it during the day rather than do it juxtaposed to tefillah. So the Friday night Matzoi Shabbos situation was never touched by Maran Panim. It wasn't relevant. So that stayed on its own, so to speak. Practically speaking, it's the way that we run our Fridays, unfortunately. Maybe now it's different because it's long Fridays. But practically speaking, for most of the year, a woman will not be able to really do a great chafifa Friday afternoon. So usually what I tell women is, your preparation for Shabbos is your Friday afternoon chafifa. She's going to shower, she'll comb her hair out, if she can take a bath, preferable. Then let's say Shabbos is when she's focused time and preparing for mikveh.
Well, is it necessary, let's say, we can go with this later at night, but can a woman do that for earlier and then
No, she can do it earlier. Yeah, she can do it earlier. In fact, there's some posts where she can do it as early as the Tagim Mincha. Even earlier, it depends what the needs are. Right? However, once a woman does her, this is very important, once a woman does her preparation for mikveh, she should not eat afterward from the preparation until she goes to mikveh. That's a position that Rush took, which the Ramah quotes, that a woman should not eat from the time that she finishes her chafifa. Obviously, if she starts a chafifa, that's from the starting point. Once she completes her chafifa, she's ready to go to mikvah. So she shouldn't eat anything until she goes underwater. And if, again, it's a mikvah, sometimes there's flexibility there. But that would be the, just to keep in mind over there.
Matter, you can make the same thing as a shower, I guess, right?
There's a minhag is to take a bath and a shower. Right, the minhag of the it was, apparently it's seen that a bath will be a more thorough cleaning, and the bath also gives an opportunity to soak if there are scabs or things like that. So the bath is seen as the preferred preparation. In a situation where one doesn't have a bath, sometimes it happens. People are in. So then I would apply the same shear to the shower.
So about time, he said to take the bath, or he said the shear of the bath plus 10 minutes for
Hafidra.
Take a bath.
To take a bath and then and to wash oneself, and then when one finishes washing oneself and shampooing, to sit in the bath for another 10 minutes. And I would think that if a bath is unavailable, we would do the same thing with a shower.
Is there an order to this, that you do the bath first or the shower and then homemade?
The only general order is that when she gets the mikveh, usually if she's done it prep at home, she usually takes another quick shower before she goes into the mikveh, to the tefillah itself. Right? The women have a choice. They can either prepare at home or prepare in the mikveh. It all depends on the practical situation. Before a woman has an active family, it's easy to prepare at home.
And preparation at the house, is there an order?
No, I don't think so. I don't think there's an order for anything. Just important that at the very end she combs her hair out again. That's the easiest thing to become snagged and curled up and knotted.
Scabs
can be a chatzitza sometimes, depends on the nature of the scab. It'll be very rare that a scab would prevent a woman from going to mikveh, because if she can remove the scab painlessly without causing bleeding, in other words, it's almost fully healed and she's about to fall off, that's what she should do. And if removing the scab would be painful or would cause bleeding, then she would just soak it for a long time to make it soft and skin-like.
Let's say a lot of times it's not going to bleed, we can pull it off.
She shouldn't hurt herself, and she shouldn't in any way create a scar or anything. So if it's already healed, it just sort of just about to fall off, so then she can try rubbing it to make it off. But she shouldn't hurt herself. There's a little bit of discomfort, and there's no downside that she should take it off. But if it's painful, she shouldn't take it off.
They weren't going to the mikveh on Friday nights because of Sakana.
They didn't
want to go on
Shabbos,
they didn't
want
to walk over.
They didn't want to walk out of town. There's communities in the metropolitan area where going to mikveh is sacrosanct. But so you have had situations where families who are not Shomer Shabbos, but they wouldn't miss going to mikveh. So there were situations where Rabbanim found that in their communities, women were driving to mikveh Friday night, because you never missed the mikveh. So they opened their mikvahs up Friday afternoon. They trained the community that on Friday you go during the day. They had to open the mikvahs Friday afternoon before Shabbos. They had to prevent chil Shabbos.
How much is Sakana going?
Sakana is in other words, if it would be dangerous to go to mikveh. So we should go Mitzvah Shabbos. Would that be a reason to have her go Friday afternoon as opposed to Friday night? So Rav Moshe would say yes, and other person would say no. Depends on what other concerns there are. If it's a question of fertility, yeah. But otherwise she waits Mitzvah Shabbos. But let's say something else. Let's say a woman says that she wants to go to Mitzvah Friday night. Doesn't want to walk alone. So I said, so your wife's mikveh takes precedence over davening with the minyan Friday night. So you daven mechilas Friday night. Right? So you daven the mikveh or something. So that certainly takes precedence. Sometimes it's a non-issue because you have to take care of the children or something. But, yeah?
To make sure I'm understanding this correctly, when she does it Friday night, and if she has a habit to do it on Friday day, that means she's doing it the seventh day, she's doing it on the seventh day?
Right. That's like the other situation. We discussed the situation where a woman wants to move up her tefillah. Right? Can she go on the during the daytime? Right? So he said it'd have to be a crazy, crazy tight situation. Can she go the night before? Never. It's going to be meaningless. Right? So she can never move it up at night. She moves it up into the daytime, it'll be effective, but we would only do that under a very, very tight situation. If she has to postpone it to the next night, okay, so we do. That's if all nights are a problem with the lady in the store, then she does it during the eighth day. There's a question that comes up every year, which is a good summary of all of these halachas. That is Leil Pesach, right? Every year, question comes up that if women are supposed to go to mikveh stay tonight, the family is coming together from all over the world to be together. So she walks in an hour late after Seder starts, and she has no makeup on, and she has her hair is wet. So, or all of a sudden, she's wearing a snood that she never wore in her life before. So, the whole family should, in her mind, the reality is not relevant over here. But in her mind, everybody at the Seder is going to say she just came home from mikveh, right? Why else is she coming so late? And why is she no makeup on? And v'chulei v'chulei. So she's going to be terribly embarrassed. So what do we do in that kind of situation? So we negotiate. We see what we can figure out. The first thing we figure out is we find out, well, maybe it won't be so bad. Maybe the mikvah's close, and maybe the men daven in a place where they say hallel. So they say, send the men to Nusach Sfard, and they daven a long hallel, and they send her to a mikvah close by. That's a possible situation. Right? That's one possibility. Let's say it's not going to work. So what's the next thing we do? So it's conceivable, but I can't imagine this is practical, to go after the Seder. I can't imagine that you're going to find a mikveh that will open up after the Seder, and that the families all from all over the world, and they're going to finish in time. But I want to explore it. The question is, what's the next step? So here's a machlokes amongst the poskim. There's a din that a person and a woman should never tell anybody that she's going to mikveh on that particular night. Right? She obviously, the husband knows. She has to tell the mikveh lady. But she never expressed it. It's a chevron from the gaonim. It's a censure. The gaonim censured a woman who openly said, I'm going to mikveh tonight. It's seen as a violation of the tznius. So therefore, it can be very, very apparent. Right? Sometimes if a woman calls up 12 grade Beis Yaakov girl to come to her house and to babysit for an hour around Shkia time, and she comes home without some story, without a bag and pathmark or something. So the 12th grader is going to be one of the possibilities, right? But that's okay. But she can't tell the girl, I got to go to mikveh tonight to watch out for my kids. Oh, so you can't do that. So now, Rav Vosner, one of the great postmen of Yisrael, says that in this situation, if by taking somebody, one person of the confidence, a mother, a sister, one person she feels comfortable with, that would create an alibi. In other words, she tells the mother, help me out, I got to make mikveh, give me a mission, right? I got to bring matzahs to a shadan 3 miles away, whatever. So if that's going to help her out, so Rav Vosner says this would be a situation where you could take one person of the confidence. When I mentioned this to Rabbi Willig, he said absolutely not. He was unhappy with this approach. He said no. He thought that it was an inviolable cherem, that's a non-option. Alright? That's a machlokes post. Was that an option or not? Well, so what's the next step? Let's say she's uncomfortable with any one woman, or they can't figure out an alibi. They're at a hotel. There are no missions, right? There are no shut-in. There's nothing. So then, so what do you do? So the next step is to explore going the next night. Right? Why the next night? Men come even later the next night. So then you find the shul where the rabbi gives a long shir. He asked the rabbi to give a long shir. So that guy helped me out. Just keep the men there in the next 20 minutes. So be mezaka the rabbi with a long shir. So that's one way of working it out. Go to a rabbi who speaks for a long time. And hallel. So who can't get to mikvah in that time? So that's a possibility. Right? Let's say it's not going to happen. Right? Let's say the mikvah is too far away. So we explore going during the first day Yom Tov during the day. Her eighth day. Right? That's our next position. In the afternoon, everybody's sleeping because it was a long Seder. They sneak out and they go to the mikvah. That's a possibility. Let's say that's not going to work because he won't open up during the day. So then some Rabbanim, let's say like this year, which is a 3-day Yom Tov, would explore going to this on the seventh day, Erev Pesach. Another Rabbanim would say, no, let's wait till the Matzoi Yom Tov. Again, this year is very tough because it's 3 days. I don't know if Rabbanim would say that, but in a regular Pesach where it's only 2 days, they say no, go, so then go Matzah Yom Tov. So those are the different positions and the different issues which come up. What happens if a woman says that she would like to postpone her mikveh night? What does that mean? It means not that she wants to postpone her mikveh night, it means that Davke, the mikveh night, is the night before her MCATs, the night before her LSATs, the night before a major, major interview. Right, she's got to prepare. She's got to get a good night's sleep. Whatever it is, she doesn't have the she's not calm enough. She's too anxious to do a chafif and to go to mikvah and to come back and to be with her husband. So is she allowed to postpone it? So that the Gemara talks about whether going to mikveh is a mitzvah or not. Tevila mizmana mitzvah lav mitzvah. Is going to mikveh a mitzvah or not? What does it mean? Is it a mitzvah or not? So usually we explain it to mean, the yeshivas they explain it means, is going to mikveh a mitzvah or a matir? Right? Is it a mitzvah and we have a rules, reason, matim and l'mitzvahs, to mitzvah as soon as you can? Or is it a matir? It's a tool that Terry gave me to permit husband and wife to be together. But it's not a mitzvah. Washing your hands before you eat bread, a mitzvah? No, we assume it's a matir. You want to have bread, wash your hands before. Right? Shechita, shechting an animal. We assume it's a mitzvah to shech an animal. Person before he's 120 years old wants to have a full portfolio of mitzvahs for the Elma Emes. He should learn how to do shechita and do at least one shechita. But he's saying, no, it's not a mitzvah. Shechita is the person wants to eat meat, so they should have to do shechita after they matir. So what about mikveh? Is mikveh mitzvah matir? So tevila bizman is going to mikveh at the right time in mitzvah. It's reason by the even the mitzvahs. Although, I know, it's a tool. When you want to be with your husbands, you go to mikveh. So most Rishonim, barring the Rebbeinu Tam, say tevila mizmana lav mitzvah. Going to mikveh is a tool. So there's no inyan of zvizim between the mitzvahs. However, this is the big however. Shulchan Aruch, when Shulchan Aruch quotes this position, Shulchan Aruch says a woman should go to mikveh as soon as possible. Why? Shalola vatel mitzvahs ona. Because forget about the mitzvah of going to mikveh, the mitzvah of ona. The mitzvah of having children. Exactly what the Shulchan Aruch means, the machlokes achronim. Machlokes, it's a debate amongst the commentaries. And it has very significant ramifications. Should we take the Shulchan Aruch literally? That it means that it might get in the way of them having children? That's what some say. Some say, no, it didn't mean that. It meant that there's a mitzvah for husband and wife to be together. We'll discuss our last class. There's a mitzvah of ona. Husband should spend time with his wife. She should be with his wife. So this is pushing off that obligation one has towards his wife. So how one paskins, it's an open issue, has very important ramifications. A woman calls up the Rav and says, you know, it's very tough for me to go to mikveh this night. So I push it off. So the Rav will try to get a sense of whether it's frivolous or whether it's necessary. Right? If it's that she's busy, because she has, I don't know, parent teachers or something like that. So just work it out. Just call the teacher. Find another way. We'll go to mikveh that night. right? If, on the other hand, it's a wedding, so the rabbi has to help the woman make a decision. If it's a friend's wedding, if it's a member of the shul, no, so I have to say, come late, so leave early. The rabbi will help the woman find a mikveh that's open late. Find the mikveh in Brooklyn and Muncie. They start much later there, and if it's a high volume mikveh, they're open to all hours of night. And in the summertime especially, they open late. They can always open very, very late in some communities. So the rabbi will help the woman find the mikveh to work it out. But let's say the rabbi feels that it's not a frivolous thing. He feels that she's really under a lot of pressure. Or let's say the woman's just insistent. Right? So the rabbi may take the following approach. He may say, well, how important is this in terms of procreation? So that might be a factor, right? So if she happens to be in contraceptives, if she happens to be postpartum, if she happens to be in her 50s and she's already taking contraceptives, not have children anymore, so that could impact how the rabbi will answer the question, right? Because if he passes tefillah of his man alad mitzvah, and if he interprets the Shulchan Aruch to say that it's our concern is postponing procreation, so he may say, look, so not so important to go tonight, right? So go the next night, right? So that's the on the other hand, if the rabbi understands that that's a concern of betel peri ribia, so that of a betel ona, then he would be very encouraging. Again, not to the point where it drives a woman crazy, and that should be the husband's perspective. The husband is always, when these questions comes up, it's always a very difficult thing for how the husband should play it out, right? The wife says it's very difficult for her to make it that night. So if the husband is very easygoing, says, right, he wants to be a nice guy, he wants to be a good husband, that's the next night, it's hard for him. So then she'll get very offended. That's not